You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
We'll take a glass together and we will lift it to the good life. And as we're lifting it, we will most sincerely say, we'll take a glass together.
This is Equity One, Broadway's happy hour.
Pour yourself a drink and join us as we chat about life, theater, and everything in between.
I'm Elliot Maddox.
And I'm Caleb Dickey. Join us for your Equity One.
Cheers!
Yes, welcome to this week's episode of Equity One. We are here continuing our haunting from Beetlejuice this month of October. We are sitting here with our super swings. We have a full table today. It's very exciting.
I think this is the biggest, most crowded episode we've had.
This is the biggest episode we've ever had, and it's very exciting. We are sitting here with Will Blum, Brooke Engen, Natalie Charles Ellis, and Sean Montgomery. Hi!
Hiya.
Hi.
Thank you so much. Oh my God, these dulcet tones. Thanks so much for being on the podcast,
Thanks
everyone.
Thanks for having us.
So because it's a supersized episode, we're going to get like right into it. We start every interview by asking our guests what first got them interested in the arts as a young person. So we'll go around the table starting with Will. What got young Will into the arts?
It would have been the Nutcracker. It would have been, I think, a tour from Memphis. I'm from Nashville, and like Memphis Ballet, and came, and I jumped up on the stage afterwards and tried to start dancing. So that was it. Yeah, started taking ballet at 3. That was my like real introduction to the arts. I didn't know about musical. I thought musicals were just the Rodgers and Hammerstein movies and Les Mis that toured the country.
Sure.
I had no idea about anything else. Oh, just Les Mis and Rodgers and Hammerstein. That's it.
Where were those ushers?
It was the end, and we were very close. They had like little, you know, side steps that go up on
fair
the
enough,
stage.
Fair enough, fair enough.
Nobody's like going to stop like a 3-year-old boy.
In the confetti? Was there like snow?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I really admired the Sugar Plum Fairy. That's what I remember the most.
Sure. Yeah. I heard that
gorgeous
about you.
Well, tutu. You know, it's so fun.
Brooke, what about you?
My parents put me in dance when I was really young, just because my sister and I were super hyper. But yeah, for me too, it was like when Nutcrackers would come to town and my grandmother would always have us watch like Music Man, Sound of Music. She would only let us watch what she had recorded on TV. So that was like the real turning point, especially when she showed us Funny Girl. When I saw that, I was like, this is exactly what I want to do.
Like, this is
Bye Bye Ballet. Musical theater. Yeah.
What about Natalie?
So my mom always wanted to be a performer when she was younger, mm-hmm. and they didn't have the money to have the lessons. So my mom, the first thing she made sure I did was I was in a tap ballet combo class at age 3.
Of course. We love a combo class.
You have to do both at the same time?
No, like you do a little bit, you have your little ballet outfit, and then you put your
Marie
Joan taps on, you know? And then I liked it, and so my mom put me in a little group called Sunshine Generation, and I just kept liking it. My mom put me in everything that she could find, like on the like any little pamphlet that she found, she enrolled me. And then my dad bought us tickets for Christmas to see Phantom of the Opera in Phoenix, Arizona. So we drove 2.5 hours to go see Phantom of the Opera, and I sat in Gamage Auditorium, and when that chandelier dropped, I was like, yes. And the whole time I was like, I know this is what I want to do. But we watched movie musicals, Calamity Jane, and it was like a moment for me.
I'm just specific.
Yeah, oh, Calamity.
I've never seen it.
Oh, I Doris Day. Come on. I can quote the entire movie. So no, I just always knew this is what I want to do.
Tell me more about Sunshine Generation.
I just want to tell you the outfits were really what was special.
Was it just like a performing troupe? Like what was it?
Oh, you know the little kids that are like picking at their wedgies and with the curly hair and big bows. It was all yellow and orange and frou-frou tutus. And my first solo was How Much Is That Doggy in the Window?
Yep.
And that's when I knew I was going to be a star.
Yes, because you just
really a standout. And I did awkward step touches off beat. It's one of the best family videos.
You really didn't know. You needed to know how much that dog was.
I know how much. I still don't know.
I guess we'll never know.
Life is hard.
It really is.
It really is, Elliot. Drink this mic, huh?
How about you, Sean?
You know, my mom was a second grade teacher before she retired, and she always would put on plays with her students, her little second graders. I don't know how she got them to do the quality of production they did at second grade. But you know, my dad would help build the sets and I would be around, and it would just be in like the cafeteria, you know, there's that little stage. And I'd hop up and I'd grab that microphone, that metal microphone, the corded one that, you know, they plug into the floor of the stage. And I was like telling jokes and like doing basically like stand up, and my parents were like, what the heck is this? You know, so they put me in acting classes, improv classes, and I started dance, at a young age too. And there was actually a dance studio in my neighborhood. You know, I started there when I was a kid, you know, doing me and my teddy bear tap dance, you know what I mean? Where they're saying the thing, now step to the right, you know, over the monitor during the recital. But because that was in my neighborhood, there were a lot of kids who, danced in my neighborhood. So other kids in town who were also the kids in the quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes on a podcast, but,
it's an audio medium.
The, professional theaters in town, you know, there were a lot of kids in the shows, and we would start writing scripts together. And so that turned into me literally building a stage in my backyard with my dad. And so I had like a little like theater company there, Backyard Players, and very original. But yeah, we used to put on plays, and they were kind of mimicked off of a theater that I worked at. And yeah, I'm from Tucson, I'm from Arizona as well, same as Natalie. But there is a theater there called Gaslight, and it's the only melodrama theater left in the country. So the boo, hiss,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
uh-huh. Act one, act two, olio, you know, the whole thing. Shows with two titles, this or da da da. And so we'd write plays kind of based on that, and we built like a little mini Gaslight in my backyard. So yeah, it just, you know, started from a young age and then continued on.
Fun fact, I don't know if you know this, but when we interviewed Matt DiCarlo, he also had a backyard theater.
No way.
Jersey. Of course it is.
Called the like Something Street Players.
Way so more original than the backyard players. Very, very. I was very on the nose.
And he said he like he wrote James Lapine to ask for the one act version of Into the Woods so that he could put it on. And James Lapine sent him a signed copy.
No way.
Yeah. Talk to Maddie about it, but
I gotta talk to him tonight about that. That's
you guys
awesome.
You guys are fellow awesome. We'll share pictures. Directors.
Yeah.
Wait, do we all start in dance though?
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's kind of simultaneous to like little like kid improv classes and stuff like that. There's like, you know,
We're not finishing
and we're
at dance
all
though.
Really
we're
good dancers.
And now we're
triple threat.
Yeah.
Brooke is the only one.
Yeah, Brooke is
to talk about.
We're gonna leave that to Brooke. It's great.
She's currently in an arabesque.
But you're also <very good. laughs>
Yeah, it's beautiful for those of you who can't see it.
It's stunning.
That is interesting that everyone kind of started in dance. I mean, I think for me personally, I always like sang and did church musicals, but the first time I realized kind of like that it was a thing was when I started dance classes. That was kind of like the first exposure I had to anything kind of serious, not recreationally, just singing at church or whatever.
Yeah.
And I know you have a similar experience.
I started with
too.
Dance as well, so, and then I started with acting and outdoor drama and then went into dance.
Yes, the blue jacket.
Yeah, that's another story.
Yeah.
So what was
the gateway drug?
Dance is the gateway drug. What was the moment where you guys switched from just recreation to being like, oh, mom, dad, this might be what I want to do for life, and going that route?
You know, lucky for me, there never had to be a turning point within my family as to like what, like, you know, like I never had to like convince them that, you know, oh, this is something worth pursuing. So luckily I always kind of had that and I just kept going. My parents were very adamant that I do many other things simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Baseball, even astronomy camp, horseback riding, you know what I mean? Like and I didn't do those like continuously. Like it was just like one summer or one semester, whatever. They just made sure like, okay, just, you know, we know you love this, but you know, let's get you some other exposure. And this just always was the constant. Mm-hmm. So it just never really was a question for me. I don't remember a certain aha moment where I'm like going full speed ahead. It just kept going and I just never stopped. But I would say like a real pivotal moment though was in my senior year. I was deciding, you know, I was going to stay and go to the University of Arizona. And not that it's a fantastic program as well, but a friend of mine said, you know, you might want to expand your horizons and just see what else is out there. And so that's when I only auditioned for two schools. I auditioned for Oklahoma City University. And
yes,
then,
where we went.
Oh yeah. I might've been at school there. But I got into Oklahoma City and then CCM, which was in Cincinnati, but those were the two that I auditioned for. And then just, you know, based on showcase opportunity and stuff, I decided to go to Cincinnati. And it was just a big, big risk for me because I grew up very little money. So it was on me. You know, my parents were like, we totally support you. We cannot financially support you.
Right.
So this is on you. And I was like, great, let's do this thing. So that was like the pivotal moment, like when I decided that I was going to professionally pursue this. But in terms of like, I knew I was going to be involved in the arts for my life. That was never like a question.
Natalie?
Or we're going.
Or whoever.
If the spirit moves.
Just at a round table, like, you know.
There was really never a question. Like, there was nothing I was ever interested in other than this. In my senior year in high school, I decided to, with my friend Nick Cartel, we booked plane tickets to come here. I'd never been to the city. So Nick was like, we're going to go to see Broadway shows. And we did Straw Hat auditions.
Yes.
Straw Hat.
Those still exist?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
They
okay.
still exist.
God, what a
it was back. Terrifying. You have a minute, 30 seconds to do two short songs and a monologue. And then you have to do a dance combination if you're asked to do it. I fell on my face. And then I did a Lucille Ball moment. And I got a bunch of callbacks.
Work.
And but I also didn't come from any money, so we didn't even have money to do applications or anything like that. It was just kind of, and I didn't have, the idea of going to school anymore was just, I couldn't do it. I went to charter school, so I've been doing performing arts schools from 7th to 12th grade. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't want to go to school. I auditioned for ASU. I didn't get into the musical theater program, and so that's why I did Straw Hat auditions. And I randomly booked a cruise ship, American Hawaii Cruise Line, which no longer exists because it went bankrupt while I was on the ship.
Okay.
Literally, they dropped us off in Maui. After 9/11, we got dropped off.
Oh my god,
that's a whole separate story. So I booked this cruise ship and I was like, okay, I'm gonna go. It started in the fall and I didn't go to college. I started doing cruise lines and then I came back and I got my equity card when that went bankrupt. And I just kept doing it.
But wow. I know you said it's another story, but this is a podcast for stories, so I want to hear more about that.
So I did the cruise line. I'm 18, so like I'm a mess.
You're an adult.
I've
we're all
never
there.
Been away from we're my parents, yeah. And my mom was very Mama Rose mixed with next to normal. I hope she's not listening to this. I love you, Mom.
We love a strong female lead.
And you know, we're going to put it that way. She's a very strong lead in my life. Wait, what was I saying?
You were 18, you were on the cruise ship.
So I was on the cruise ship and there were like reviews and like big ballads and big songs. I'd never done anything like that. And it was fun. And wait, I had to write a one-woman show for the cabaret and I'd never done anything like that. And it was going really well. I didn't save any money because it was $400 a week and I had to run bingo and teach hula classes because I don't know. And then all of a sudden 9/11 happened while I was on the ship.
Uh-huh.
And slowly no one wanted to travel. And we, every port we would go, and more metal detectors were out and guys with guns, and it was just really terrifying. And then slowly the locals on the ship started taking things off at port during the weeks. And we're sitting there, we're doesn't look normal. Like, they're all like emptying their rooms and suitcases in Oahu, especially because a lot of them are local Hawaiians. It was all about Hawaiian culture. It was a really cool ship. So I learned a lot about Hawaii. And then all of a sudden, it was like 2 weeks later, I was like, I feel like we should be packing. And they're like, tomorrow we won't be docking because we can't afford port fees anymore. So for the next 3 days, we're just going to sail around the islands and then we're dropping you off in Maui.
Oh my God.
I was like 18. I'm like, what? So we had to pack up our shit real quick. And we were dropped off in Maui. I didn't even have a credit card. I had to call my dad and be like, hey, Dad, I can't even buy a plane ticket home.
They didn't get you back to the
mainland? Nope. And because we were independent contractors, we didn't even get the $200 stipend that everyone else on the ship got because we didn't work for American White Cruise Lines. We worked for, I won't mention. So this company decided not to give us any money. So I'm 18, I maybe have $300 like in cash. And my dad had to spend $860 on a one-way ticket for me to get home. But it took 2 days. Luckily there was a girl in my company who really liked to date boys. So she knew a Navy intern, like an engineer intern, and he got a free hotel. So we all, there were like 15 of us in his hotel room, and then I got home.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was a very good lesson growing up, and I got a credit card immediately, and I learned how to save money right away. Build that credit, honey.
It only takes one experience where you're like, shit, I have no money.
Yep.
To where you're like, okay, stranded. Now's the time for me to have money. Like,
literally stranded. Stranded. I would have to swim. I mean, there's worse places to be.
Worse places.
Yeah.
Natalie, that sounds exactly like college.
You didn't miss anything.
Yeah,
you're
same
fine.
Thing.
You're fine.
Yeah. Same thing. Especially
it really is. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty close.
Yeah. Oh, God. Brooke, what island were you stranded on?
It's hard to follow up that story.
All right.
Now I'm going to sound so basic. No, I don't think I had like one of those, you know, light bulb moments when I was like, oh, this is exactly what I want to do. But I will credit my parents with everything for when, from the time I was really young, they would bring us to either New York or LA in the summers. And we'd do like dance intensives and like kids commercial classes and baton, like just random classes. Then again, we'd heard about like in our community or through our dance studio, yada, yada. Come to town, see a bunch of shows. And I think like having that be somewhat of a constant in my life made me start to think, okay, this isn't as scary as I thought it would be. I do think if I just came right out here, I'd be like, oh my gosh, this is so different from, you know, Minnesota. What's happening? So I think that was like a really good like feeder program to like understand what I was really getting into. That's
now when you say we for our listeners, you're talking about someone else.
I'm talking about,
tell them about that.
I have a twin sister, Tiffany, who is also in the business, which is super exciting. Like, it's always great to have someone that knows exactly what you're going through, and obviously we've been at the same phases at different points in our career. We would typically go in for the same roles when we were first starting out, being like little and blonde and
looking exactly the same.
And then over time, we've kind of carved our own lanes, which has been like super exciting. And it just makes it so much more clear, I think, for like, I would think on the other side of the table. For us, it never really mattered. We were like, I hope one of us gets it. That'd be then we can pay our rent.
Right. Yes.
It's just nice that we have a little bit of like, you know, separation now. I love, you know, swinging and covering a bunch of tracks. That's my jam. Yes.
Did you and Tiffany move right to New York, or did you go to college, college, separate colleges?
Yeah, we had moved to New York. Tiff had done like AMDA. I had done a school in New York, and then we were also auditioning at the same time.
Okay.
And so then I got one of my first jobs in New York and just kind of went full speed ahead. Yeah.
Have you guys ever parent trapped a situation?
Like, I
can't make that call back. Can you go?
No. No, I wish. That would be like so fun sometimes. But no, and like even growing up, we like changed classes once, and that's only because the teachers were like, switch classes and see if we can tell. So we did.
Could they tell?
No, the teachers couldn't, but the kids could.
Oh, yeah.
So it's right, like always, right. You know. Uh-huh. But yeah, no, that'd be. Maybe one day we will. What if she just walked into Beetlejuice one day and was like, all right,
surprise, guys. Actually,
do you guys have one defining like characteristic that you're like, oh, you know what I mean? Like that people would be like, oh, definitely.
I mean, we both have these birthmarks on our face, but hers is slightly lower, so it was always Tiffany teeth. That's how people would tell us apart. But you gotta get close.
You all look different. Like especially spending so much time with you, like a year now.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Tiffany comes in the building, I'm like, oh yeah, they are identical, but like look completely different to me.
And we all spend so much time together. Yes. You know what I mean? The more like, and I'm sure she's currently doing Rock of Ages. I'm sure they would say the exact same thing. The more time you spend with people, you're like, yes, they are similar, but
you guys have such different energies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said.
People have such a hard time telling me and Sean apart sometimes, and I'm just like, spend more time with us.
That's great. Will, what about you?
I think mine was, I must have been maybe 7 or so. My aunt gave me, this will date me, gave me the double cassette of Phantom of the Opera. Mm. And I said, what is this? And she said, it's a Phantom of the Opera. It's a musical. And I said, where? She said, on Broadway. And I said, what's Broadway? And that was the moment, you know, and she explained to me sort of what it was. And I just, that's when my mind sort of expanded. And eventually, maybe a year later, when I was 8, we came to New York and saw Phantom of the Opera, Front Row, The Chandelier. Mm-hmm. I blew my mind. Secret Garden and Miss Saigon, all original cast. Like it was like it would have been 1991,
92. High drama.
And I mean, I was obsessed. My mom tried to cover my eyes during like the stripper part of Miss Saigon. I was like, damn. Little did she know, I really
don't worry, mom.
But no, that was it. I came home in my second grade class. I made them do Phantom of the Opera. I made them do it. Like eventually, my second grade teacher gave me the last 15 minutes after lunch to do theater with the kids, and
that's so cool.
An abridged version of Phantom, an abridged version of Les Mis. The Cutting Edge. Anyone remember that figure skating movie?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyone out there? And then we did almost a full version of West Side Story with the full class.
Why wasn't it full?
Well, because it was just it was literally we put on the record, literally and did it. So it was just the musical number.
Sure.
So I don't think there were any book scenes. I don't think I had. I probably couldn't get them to read that well.
The Bernstein estate. The Bernstein estate thanks you.
Yeah. But that was it. I just knew. I mean, it was in the same way that everybody's talking. Like, it was just like once I knew that was a place and that's the Broadway was a place where people did these things, that was just it. I was like, oh, well, that's why I've been dancing. That's why I've been trying to get to a place where I can sing and dance and act at the same time. So all of a sudden, to a little kid, the fact that Disney castle exists somewhere and that I might be able to enter it one day, that was it. I was done. Whether, you know, my parents weren't, not that they weren't supportive, but they would much rather I excel at science and math or do anything. You know, there were a lot of things. I got cast in, like, the professional Sound of Music in Nashville, and they wouldn't let me do it because there were too many 10 a.m. performances where I would miss school and all these things. So they really were making sure that no matter what, I had an education to fall back on. It didn't really work. By high school, I was skipping class just to paint the set for the high school play.
Totally.
You know what I mean? I didn't understand the point of learning chemistry when I knew I wasn't going to be using it. But do chemistry. Do your homework. If you're a kid. Important.
I think that's relatable. I mean, when you say that, I totally relate to like the skipping class to like hang out in the drama room or like whatever. And, you know, teachers letting you leave early to go to a rehearsal somewhere. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that's an important thing in education now that, you know, is so like test oriented that people out there that do educate see that these kids have like different needs.
Yeah.
Because it was transformative for me, as I'm sure it was the same for you.
Yeah. Well, and it's for me, it was about finding a community where I was accepted and appreciated for the gifts that I had. And so once I did find that, you know, in my community theater near my hometown at the Roxy, you know, I mean, that was my home all of a sudden. That was, I was very much a part of everything there. So going back to school and trying to do these things or learn aspects of it that I knew I wouldn't apply in theater, I was just like, get me out of here. Let me do. So I wish I'd gone to a performing art. I would have done, I think, a lot better at a performing arts school or something like that than just regular public school. God bless it. But
yes, God bless it. We don't all have those opportunities.
No, sure.
Yeah. Well, let's move to the task at hand, right? We're all in Beetlejuice right now.
What?
Oh. Yeah. Yes. And I want to talk about kind of the varying jobs that you all do at the theater. So we'll start with Brooke.
Okay.
Brooke, you act as the most.
Brooke. Literal ghost with the most.
Yeah. Brooke acts as our female swing and dance captain. So will you tell our listeners what that means for you?
Okay. So as a dance captain, there's obviously a dance captain for every show, typically selected by the choreography team. And my job is to basically uphold the intellectual property of that choreography for the show as it was set. What does that mean?
Wow. I know. I was like,
oh, I'm sweating. Awesome.
Yes, bullet point. I know. We're in trouble.
This is legal.
Secretly, this is a note session. Like,
I was like, I'll be on four.
Yeah, that's like the clinical term of it.
Sure.
But what that job entails literally is keeping the show tight, people on their numbers, doing the choreography as it was initially intended, putting in replacements, putting in understudies, the list goes on. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also a swing. I cover all the females in the show as well as the men, and a specialty track called Girl Scout. And so, yeah, any night I could be on for literally anything.
Is there technically anything you don't cover? I mean, besides principals, besides Girl Scout?
No. I mean, to be honest, like, dance captains and swings are quite often, like, always internal swings. Like, if anything goes awry and if you have way too many people down, the person that's going to know that in the building that could possibly even go on just so you have, like, a show for that night is going to be the swing.
I'd love to see your oath, though.
I mean, I've been working on it a lot.
Why not?
I really would, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a super fulfilling, super satisfying, super hard job, but I like really, really love it. I love being able to be a bunch of people. I also think it's good physically. You're very balanced out, in my opinion. Sometimes I'm doing things fully stage right, kicking left, dips, turns. Like, it just, for me, I kind of like that it's different every night.
You're good at it.
You're a rock star. Are you kidding me?
Would you walk us through, like, a hypothetical Thursday? So walk us through a Thursday for you.
Okay.
Where potentially something might happen during Act Two.
Okay. So
just to give the audience an idea of one of your days might look like.
Okay. Some days, like today, I'll get a phone call at 10 in the morning saying, hey, you're going on for such and such a role. Do you need anything before going on? Let us know what the lift call is, because we do have a lot of lifts in our show, for you listeners that may not know. We do a lift call at half hour, and we also do a lift call at the top of two, because it's important to do the lifts in the environment in which they happen, and half of our show is raked, and the other half is not. Mm-hmm. So on a Thursday, say I roll into the building, I always actually do a slight vocal warm-up and a physical warm-up, because you really never know when you can be on, and you'd hate to be like, oh, God, I haven't even moved my body today. Mm-hmm. Come in, say the show starts. The act one is pretty light, I would say, physically for the ensemble. And say, for example, we'll play hypotheticals. Wink, wink.
Hypothetical things that have never happened.
somebody hurts themselves in Zombie Cheerleaders, in Being Dead 2. They let stage management know, they let me know, and we say, okay, with what's left of the act, what do you think is possible? I think I can finish act one. There's no way I can do act two. Okay. Say it's a female, I would go in for that track. I'd start prepping. I'd get into the show as fast as possible. So at the top of two, we'd do a lift call, and I'd be in that track for the rest of the show. If it's a male, we typically would have Eric Anthony Johnson, our male swing. If he was already on, then I'm in. So it's very much like a chess game of like who's already on or what do we save somebody for. We deal with that a lot when we have our vacation swings in the building, mm-hmm. of okay, if these vacation swings are here and they know this track, let's put them on in those positions if that's available, because myself and Eric have been here since day one and we just have a history of being better equipped mm-hmm. for handling something that really isn't a vacation swings job to cover. Mm-hmm. And so we would go on and things like that. And then there's also the fun track of split tracking when there's way too many people out and you have to decide what's actually important for storytelling, what's important for like the picture of it all, the aesthetic. Does it still look good or is there going to be a spotlight on a blank?
Uh-huh.
so it's trying to like dodge those things and mm-hmm. how you can possibly do two things at once. But yeah, so you kind of work things out preemptively, but you can never really be fully prepared because most of the things you prep for is not the thing that actually happens.
Sure.
But it's the act of prepping that gets you kind of more in the game.
It sounds daunting, but you know the show from beginning, so it's kind of like you like know it so well that it's like easy almost, right?
Yeah. But I will say it takes a journey to get there. Like that is what I remember when we were in D.C. thinking, okay, if so-and-so was out and this person was out, could I go this and this? And like trying to figure out in the very beginning was very daunting.
Yeah.
Like you're just because mm-hmm. the show is still developing, always in previews, like when things were changing, you're kind of like, God, I hope I'm not on tonight because this like literally just got set 2 hours ago and I have just a mini footage of it and mm-hmm. I did a little staging chart, but here's hoping. So it definitely takes a while to feel like, okay, I've got this. I know the puzzle.
Yeah.
But now she got that puzzle.
She got it. She got it. So that's a look into what you do. Now, Will, Natalie, and Sean, you do kind of a different swing job.
Yes.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Well, yeah, we're all kind of the same more than. Yeah.
I mean, we're definitely the counterparts of each other, Natalie and I, and Will. I mean, I'd say the three of us sit in the same kind of pot
sure.
in terms
yeah.
of
mm-hmm.
what our what the show needs us for.
So you are swings.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But you cover more the principal roles and the ensemble features.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It almost feels like I would call myself an offstage understudy.
Offstage understudy.
Like, but who knows? Actually, who knows? If a bunch of people go down, who knows?
Well,
that's the
we haven't had to deal with that yet.
Luckily.
But we do have the term swing. So,
right.
So they can throw a song for anyone.
Right. No.
Yeah.
Which is terrifying.
Well, that's I'm more of a standby.
More of a
technically.
Standby.
Well, I mean,
right
and,
now,
I mean,
that's where you live.
If somehow Sean and Abe were both out of the building, then and either David or Adam Danheiser. They would all have to be out in order for me to be either Adam or Otho. Those are technically
right.
the only other
yeah.
parts that I cover, but I've never even trained for it. It's been made
yeah.
very clear that I'm there to
your
to,
main job
yeah,
is to
just be there to cover Brightman.
To cover
yeah,
Beetlejuice. Yes.
Yeah. Which fine.
No, it's a really
much easier.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
yeah.
I mean, but it's enough of a task in itself.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it's a lot. It's been. It was great. They went through two rounds of understudy rehearsal to train two different tracks for everybody, and I did Beetlejuice both times, and I was really thankful to have both sets of rehearsals for mm-hmm. it to really get it into my body, because it is just a lot. It's more than anything, it's a lot of technical elements, a lot of puppets, a lot of fire, a lot of,
yeah.
you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, it's a show that it's a really an all hands on deck kind
yeah.
of show.
When mm-hmm.
one, I mean, every cog is incredibly important. Not that they aren't in every show,
no,
most, but in this show, there are a lot of roles. You know what I mean? So if someone is bumped up into a role, that leaves a big hole in the ensemble because
mm-hmm.
there are so many mm-hmm. little things that will snowball. So this is a really unique thing, I think, that a lot of shows don't do, to have this.
It's
crop of people
yeah.
off stage to cover these leading roles. So it's cool that they notice that about their production and put that in place, because I think it keeps things running pretty smoothly over
yeah.
at Beetlejuice. It's mm-hmm. one of the most, you know, smoothly
well,
opera.
And I will say that's the most intimidating thing about being an understudy, is because I've always pictured the show, and I came into the show, I wasn't a part of it in D.C., but
mm-hmm.
I came in for the first rehearsals, and in New York, and even then, everybody just knew it so well, and there were so many little tiny moving parts, and I noticed in a lot of Alex Timber shows where it's just like, there's so many little tiny details that make up this big picture, that if you just mess up one of those details, it's a domino. Like, it really, or that's how it felt to me, that if I didn't follow through on one of these moments, or this one moment of magic, or something like that, that it would ruin the illusion for the next 5 minutes, you know what I mean? So it really, I think, and I will say, I think that this is an incredible group of understudies. Like, the everybody now has gone on for the parts that they cover, except for you haven't gone on for Charles yet.
That's the one, last one. Yeah.
But I'm just every time he's
the last one standing. He hasn't missed a show.
He hasn't
yet.
Missed one.
Not
show.
One show.
But every time an understudy goes on, I'm just insanely impressed by the skills that they bring. Not only that they're doing what needs to be done for the production of the night, but that they brought their own hilarious version of that character to the stage, and I think it's just a wonderful group to be a, I'm very proud to be a part of the group, and to say, oh, an understudy's on, I can't wait for you to see this person, you know, instead of, oh, an understudy's on, that's too bad, you know, it's like, no, you're getting a special treat tonight.
And also what's cool about this specific production, because this isn't my first time covering, we have had our stage manager Maddie and Brooke and everybody, like, it's, we were given the permission to make the roles our own. They have made sure that we know the marks, we know where to stand, like, we know what we need to do to fill the show and to not change anything. But if we make a random choice or we do anything, Alex Timbers has been very involved to be like, go with it, and like direct us in our own way. So when we do go on it, we don't have to mimic the people we cover. We just have to be like, just stay in the spots, and for safety reasons, and to not ruin anyone else's show, because that's kind of our job, to like make sure that the rest of the people that do the show, that like hundreds of times and have only never rehearsed with us, which is terrifying, but like they, like, we don't ruin their show, but we get to enhance our performance with our own choices.
Yeah, all of this comes down from the top. I mean, Timbers has just been like so incredible with all of us, and allowing us to create as well as fill the shoes of these roles. But yeah, it's been an incredible experience. But you know, the interesting thing I think is this is my first time being off stage, and I've covered a million times a bunch of different roles. But you're in the show every night, so you get to feel what it feels like to be under the lights and on that stage. And oh, this is where that section of the deck is, you know, and what this feels like and what the audience response feels like. But for all of us, like it was wild to the first time being in the show. Be leading the show. Yeah. Like, that feels like a really out of body experience. You're like, whoa, oh, it's on me? We're good?
Right.
Okay, we're doing this thing? Like, okay, you know I haven't been up here with you. Yeah. Okay, we're going? Okay, go, here we go. So that was a totally different experience than stepping up from a position that you're in every night, as opposed to just from the wings to the stage.
And there's no kind of put in that would ever make you be
comfortable.
I mean, when I went on for the first time, the first 15 minutes, my body acknowledged as trauma. Like, I don't remember. I'm not anything like, I just don't remember it. Yeah. I don't remember it. I was pouring sweat. Like, it was just, it was terrifying. It just, because there are so many elements that you just can't include in a rehearsal.
And there's something, too, about the train not being able to stop.
Yes.
That's a different pressure that can only be replicated in that exact scenario. You're like, this is going, this cannot stop. Yeah. That is not the same at a put in.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
Even though we try to get as close to conditions as possible.
Right.
It's pressure's on.
Very bizarre. Because I just went on for Leslie for the first time this past week. And like, I've never even spoken to Adam Danheiser on stage. Like, I've never even spoken to him. And then I was like, oh, I'm playing with my friend. Like, I'm sitting on stage, and like, I could not have rehearsed this more, known it more. But still, you go on stage and you're like, oh, this is fun. And you're like, wow, there's 1,350 people sitting in the audience out there. And they're like, wait, what am I wearing? Oh no, it feels like something's weird. Wait, what's my next line?
Yeah.
And then you just sit and you're like, wow, my feet hurt. I've never been on a regular stage like this really in this team. And you sit and it's just this weird experience. Like, you forget. It feels like play practice. And then you're like, wait, this couldn't be higher stakes. It's Broadway. and so like, it's just, and then you just feel your adrenaline. Like, I've never been more tired. More tired.
Just
it's bizarre.
After you go on, or just in general?
Well, like, it's like sensory overload, because I've never been off stage either, and you almost lose this, you don't have that same stamina of doing it 8 times a week in general, and then you to have just played, last time you went on, you were somebody else, and you've never done it with these people, but it's someone you know, and it's just, I get off stage, and it's just your brain's tired, it's not even your body, it's just your brain's tired. And it's just, yeah, I've never experienced it before I've done. And I've covered a lot as well. Yeah.
The interesting thing I think too is that no one in the building has seen your skill set unless you've done a show with them yeah, before. Sure. It's like, oh, I wonder if he's any good. Yeah. No, you know
what I mean? Well, not any of that. But what's interesting is, you know, most of the majority of the company remained intact from DC. So we had already gotten to, like, you know, be with the show for a little while, be with each other for a little while, go out of town, which is like summer camp. So it's like the bonding level goes way up, and get to know each other's skill sets. And then, so when we were so excited to welcome you all, but it kind of came, and then it was like during rehearsals. So we barely got to meet, and it was like, so it was really exciting to finally, like, I wasn't in the first put in. I actually got to like watch a little bit, and it was really cool to just like see everyone do their thing. It was just, I was just like, oh my God, I know these people are amazing, but like, it's so cool to just see them do the show. And well, I was glad to get to watch. That was fun.
And I didn't go on for 8 months. Wow. I like Brightman did not call out until what, 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And that was that. And even that was scheduled. But I really had a sense of that where like, I was just a super fan of the show who was hanging out backstage, basically. You know what I mean? Like, I knew all the words and just sat there. But it did start to feel like I wasn't earning my keep. I haven't showed these people, you know, what I can even do, that I deserve to be here. You know, and I did start to sort of pull back in a lot of ways just because I'm like, I don't really feel... I know I'm a part of this company, but I haven't done my job yet. Like, that's the main thing. It was hard to feel like a part of the company when I hadn't stepped on that stage in any costume, sure. You know what I mean? But now it's really fun. Can I say one more thing about Timbers?
Please.
Because he's on, and also because I have understudied many times before, and I've never, almost never have had the opportunity to work with the director of the show. And he came to our understudy rehearsal. He came to, he came to two of the shows that I was on and gave me note. Like, he is just so supportive and so loving. And the main thing, too, that I love about him is that he doesn't want you to ask for permission. And comedy, specifically, I think, can't exist under a bullseye. I've worked with a lot in a lot of different places where the comedy had to be exact in a certain way and fit in a certain box, and it just died because of that. And so the fact that Timber says, no, you have to play with it, keep it open, there are no rules, and I feel like Leslie Kritzer is the leader of that company, you know what I mean? Because but she always, no matter what, it will just turn something in a new way and make us see, you know, and it keeps everybody on their toes, and it keeps the comedy alive. But that's why I would say that the comedy is even better and more full and more rich than it was when we opened now, because only because of his advice when it comes to that. So thank you, Alex Timbers.
Well, and that's also let everybody, like, when going on, everybody plays with you.
Yeah.
Like, if you make a different choice, you can see they're like, oh, I see that ball that you just passed to me, and I'm going to toss this back.
Yeah.
And so it's very fun, and that's why I kept getting distracted, because I'm like, I'm playing with my friends, because they were going off of my choices.
Yeah.
And so Timbers totally set that vibe, and Maddie in understudy rehearsals. Like, it's just a very free, fun, creative environment.
Style trickles down in the best way.
Totally.
With this company.
And it's and I was actually going to say that exact same thing. It's just like, when in the show at night, when it's the full onstage company, it feels that way. It feels like there's always little things that are being played with, or there's little things that are different. Like, that's the norm. It never feels like it's super like cut dry. This is our 8 show a week. Mm-hmm. So when a cover is on, it feels the same in that sense of like, oh, this is just some kind of like new fun thing, and it doesn't feel like, not like buttholes don't clench, you know. Like, you know, it's very like,
speak for yourself.
We're clenched. Yeah. You're not. Yeah.
Just so we're just cool.
Slowly paying down our pants.
One last question before we move to like
light.
Some fun segments.
No, if this wasn't fun, very stressful.
Inequity too.
What are some of the? I want to hear everyone talk about like what's maybe the biggest challenge of being a swing, being someone off stage. What do you find is the hardest thing, and then maybe what's the most rewarding? Just the kind of yin yang.
I'll go first.
Yeah. No, I was going to say Brooke.
I always say that the hardest days to be a swing are when all the special stuff happens. opening nights, Tonys, mm-hmm. parades, what have you, like special television appearances in general. Like those days are just a little like, or like even I remember, you know, when y'all came out for the first time in your mourner looks in DC, and it was like a costume parade, and we were like, and pictures and everything, everyone's going nuts, and you know, you're just sitting in the audience, and you're like, oh. I don't even know if I have a mourner costume yet. But, so those days are a little rough. But I will say, I do find it so fulfilling, like, going on for a bunch of different roles, getting to use, like, literally every crayon in your in your Crayola crayon box, like, truly. And you never know what it's going to be each day. It's totally different. I always joke in our room, like, I love consistency. I love having some type of semblance of control in my life. I don't like that, actually, in showbiz. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the thrill-seeker moment in me, is, like, going to the theater every night and being like, I don't know what I'm going to go on for, and I'm going to put my body through fight or flight. It's going to be super fun. But, like, in entertainment, I love that. In life, I value consistency.
Sure.
Like, super chill.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so for me, it's the yin and my yang.
I love that.
I just had this image of you as this chaotic person, which is like, I just can't. Just like,
as I sit here,
crazy puck faces.
As I'm in a turtleneck.
Will, what about you?
This is stupid, but I think it's the same thing, which is the expectation of the audience of an understudy, and specifically for playing Beetlejuice in Beetlejuice. It's the same thing. I was an understudy. I was an understudy in Mormon for a while, and then I was Alex's alternate for School of Rock. So I've had to deal with that being not the guy for a long time, and it is I now really enjoy the game of the audience is disappointed that it's me, and how long does it take for me to win them over. And it's a really fun game, honestly, because in a non-bragging way, I always win. There's never been a time when I, at the end, they're like, oh, that was so bad. It was that guy. And it really is, and with something like this, like with Beetlejuice, the content is so good.
So good.
That of the four shows I've done, I win them over within the first couple moments that I'm on stage, which is so rewarding and so incredible to know that, to really know that I've done my work and that I've done, and that the creators have done their work. And there are certain things that I know that when I put on the costume, when I put on the makeup, when I put on the wig, I am Beetlejuice and this is what I'm selling. And I even asked, Eddie about that line about like, I do this bullshit like 8 times a week. I was like, well, they're seeing an understudy. Should I like change that? You know, can we do this?
Sure.
And he was like, no, it's Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice does the show 8 times a week. It's not Alex. And I was like, very good. Very good. I love that. You know, and that was it. Exactly. So, there's a lot of rewarding things, that come from being an understudy that in a way that, that I think when you're playing the part, you get praised a lot at the very beginning, and then it just dwindles away, and then it's everybody's 8 show a week. And so there is something really fun about when I do get to go on. It's exciting. Everybody's excited. You know, everybody in the company is excited for something new to happen on stage that day. So it's kind of the worst and the best aspect of it is just being somebody that has to win over everybody in the room, and being able to win over everybody is... there's nothing better than that for me.
Yeah. Okay.
Natalie,
all eyes were on me. So I guess it's my turn. It feels really good to be able to, the show, if someone can't be there, the show couldn't go on. So you get to go on and the show gets to go on. So there's a feeling of saving the day, even though we're paid to do it. So it's literally our job to save the day. But there's a feeling of like you're doing good for the company, you're doing good for the show. Mm-hmm. And so there's that. But then there's also the feeling of not knowing who you're going to be that night. Sometimes that's very stressful. Like especially when you're not in the show, So you're like, so I don't know what type of voice I should be warming up, because if I go on for Carrie, it's totally different mm-hmm. than if it's for Leslie. And if I go on for Jill, like, she's all character voices, so it's a different form of warming sure. up. So like when I got the call about Leslie, and I had done a put in and I was ready, but I was walking around the grocery store in Hoboken, like shopping, and it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't want to be anywhere, but I need to get out of here. So that feeling is stressful. I hate that. Uh-huh. But now that I've gone on for it, I think that that will change. Mm-hmm. I think it's just the feeling of I've never been an offstage cover before. It's that constantly not knowing what's going to happen and listening to the show. And yeah, I'm playing Mario Kart on my phone and I'm reading. Uh-huh. Yeah, of course.
You gotta give me your number.
Oh, are we gonna be friends? Okay, great. So or reading my book or finding alto lines with Brooke in the dressing room. We have really great alto lines, Eddie. We'll talk about it later. But it's that moment of like when you hear someone cough or you hear that Leslie's shoe fell off and she could have hurt her ankle. You're like, shit, do I need to put pin curls right. in? What the fuck's gonna happen? So it's that I don't like. But then it's fine. It's just constant anxiety. So it's like maybe I need to go on some Zoloft. I don't know.
They're a sponsor, so
they're the sponsor of Broadway.
New York City. Let's be honest.
Sean, the hardest part about being an offstage cover. Probably beating Will in Monopoly Deal.
Never gonna happen.
I still need to play.
No, I'd say honestly, Broadway audiences love to watch the impossible. So shows are like upping the game every year with like new tricks, new thing. You know, so all of the roles I've covered have kind of always had some sort of special element to them, be it Bert and tap dancing upside down on a ceiling, be it Miss Trunchbull and dancing with a ribbon in a fat mm-hmm. suit and not getting tied up in it and throwing it, you know, Mr. Wormwood magic, you know, wigs and hair change colors and things that can go wrong, you know, and even in Beetlejuice, you know, falling through a floor, magic mouth plates, mm-hmm. you know, it's all of these sort of things that need to be rehearsed and you can find the nuances in them to be like, wow, I just really pulled off that magic. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things that it's always the thing. You know what I mean? If it's, you know, even something small, like, oh, you have to catch the apple in the show. Somebody throws you an apple. You have to, that's the thing sure. that keeps me up at night.
It's not,
yeah. Like throwing a pie, you know, things like that in the show. Those are the things that keep me up at night, you know, not the lines, not the lyrics, not the, you know, the acting, all of that sort of stuff, you know, we've rehearsed, you know, but it's all those little things.
Sweat the little things.
Yeah. Sweat the little things. Yeah. Yes. It's those. But I mean, but you know, more to Will's point, I think the most rewarding moment is just, you know, the fans are so amazing on mm-hmm. on every show. I've just been so fortunate to be on shows that just have these incredible fans. And the best compliment you can get is when they're like, they don't even know that you were the mm-hmm. understudy. You know what I mean? They'll call you by the person who played, you know, I've been, you know, at the stage, oh, David, you know, and I'll be like, oh, you know what, I'm actually, he's out today. I'm, you know, I'm Sean, nice to meet you. They're like, wait, what? You know, and then they're like, how many times have you been on? And sometimes when you haven't been on that much, that's just even a better feeling. Yeah. You're like, oh my God, you've only done this twice, blah, blah, blah. You know, and it's cool. Like Will said this the other day, you know, was out and saw some fans, just a family that had seen the show earlier. And to them, you were the guy. You were the guy. Yeah. So that doesn't change. You know, they came, they saw Beetlejuice. It was you. You were their experience. And that's such a cool feeling to, you know, that group of, you know, 1,300 audience members left. And for them, that you were that role.
Yeah.
So that's, just feels great, you know, and it feels good to get that kind of feedback at the stage door.
For sure.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
And with that, it's time for Merch Madness. Now, this week's Merch Madness is not an official heat, but it's to determine the third place winner of this month's Merch Madness. Now, in this heat, we have the color-changing mug, which is a fan favorite, and we also have the Greetings from the Netherworld baseball tee. Now, we all know how much I love a t-shirt, and I do love the design of the Netherworld tee. However, it's really hard to beat this color-changing mug, the stripes, and it's just the utility alone. I use the mug multiple times in a week, whereas I can't wear the shirt multiple times in a week. So I do have to say that, you know, some people thought the mug was going to go all the way. It didn't quite make it there, but it is going to take third place in Beetlejuice edition of Merch Madness. So there you have it. The mug takes third, folks. And next week we have our final matchup. So stay tuned, and we look forward to hearing who you think is going to win on our social media. And now, one last thing. We have a quick little game for everyone. So this is rapid fire.
Oh, God.
Okay. I'm trying something new. So like, we're going to, so oh, intermittents between questions, we're going to have the game, that beautiful sound. So we're going to test and see. So you have to guess what the sound is, okay? It's my little bonus tomorrow.
I love it.
So oh, listen, God. Here's the first one, and I want a lot of imagery. We'll see how this goes.
Oh, crunching, apple.
Crunching into a chip.
Oh, chip.
I want to go with eating cucumber.
Chips. Eating
close.
Pickles.
Eating pickles. We have pickles. Oh, right. Okay, so that, was, that was me eating a kosher pickle. Okay.
Oh, it was you.
So yeah, I made them all myself. Okay. No, least favorite Halloween candy. Shout it out.
Candy corn.
Oh, candy corn, easily.
Those peanut butter nugget things. Oh, God. I'm playing, but I'm
this one's for Abe, Whoppers.
Oh, gross. Hate Whoppers.
Whoppers are terrible, too.
Oh,
Abe loves Whoppers, and he sucks.
Those zombie Skittles.
What no, those are great. What? I love that game. No, I love that game. It tastes disgusting. Like death, but it's funny.
Right. Okay.
It's
funny.
Shouldn't exist.
Next one, next ASMR.
That sound, if you're ready.
Oh.
Sipping a cola through a straw.
Drinking ramen.
A really refreshing soda.
Really refreshing. It wasn't
Sprite.
Soda.
Seltzer.
Seltzer. White Claw.
White Claw.
White Claw. Brought to
it
you
should
by.
Be White Claw.
Beer?
But that was my morning coffee.
Aww.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh. So it's very loud coffee. Very loud coffee.
Yeah, no, I was like, it
didn't
coffee.
Sound that
okay,
thick.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, who would survive the zombie apocalypse out of the swing team?
Brooke.
Brooke.
Really?
Yes, oh, you have the
gosh,
chart book.
You, guys.
You have
yes.
the book.
Oh, well, I think we might, if we work together, I think we'd all survive. How about that?
Yeah, there you
because,
go.
Because, listen, Sean is very, very good when it comes to details, and he can talk well, anybody true. Into anything. So if yes. I had to choose somebody, I would go with Sean. You know? Okay. No offense.
No, but I really like, think,
I follow
I think, Brooke I think the swing team could survive the apocalypse.
I'm an Eagle Scout, I'm
for
just
sure.
saying.
Yeah,
I'm an Eagle
I
Scout.
Think,
I would, I could... Get us out of, you know, I can...
I'll make sure everyone laughs while we're getting through it.
Yes, Natalie, okay. Laughter is so
that
important.
Yep, next yep. Sound, next
thank
sound,
you for your contribution.
Ready?
Sprinkling.
Bag of
Christmas a bag?
It's in a bag, but a bag of what?
Chips. We love chips. We love chips at our show.
Candy?
Candy, yes, that was it, exactly.
Candy.
Yes. Yes. Nailed that. That from? Okay, best Halloween costume ever.
Like
that you've
worn?
Done that
oh.
you've worn yet.
Oh.
I was Bob's big boy.
Oh my god, when, from Frishes?
Yeah.
Yeah I like solid, so I love that Frishes.
It was really good.
I've done a dead celebrity party for Halloween. I think it was Halloween, and I was Natalie Wood freshly pushed off the boat with a footprint on my ass.
Oh my god.
If you guys don't know the split Natalie Wood story, you need to Google it.
I was also named after Natalie Wood, so that's why Work. I really liked oh. it. But she was pushed off the boat.
OMG.
Christopher Walken, I'm looking at you. All right.
I had a heart. I was Shirley Temple for like two Halloweens.
Solid.
So cute. Yeah.
So cute. Sean. Did you perform? Did you perform in the
Obviously.
Costume?
Oh,
okay, good.
It got me more candy, so.
Yeah.
Sean.
There's a childhood photo of me as Quasimodo. It's very bizarre.
No!
Yes.
You look just like Quasimodo.
Okay, last one. This one's last very ASMR. Specific.
Okay. Patti LuPone. No, it's it is, Elena.
It's
that Patti?
From what?
Avita.
Yeah, duh. That's the last one.
And,
that's
and,
fun.
And pretty with that... Thank you all so much for being
on the
podcast.
It's over?
For having us.
I know.
An hour sounded like it was going to be so long.
I know.
We could keep going.
We like to make it fun.
Yeah.
Real quick, where can people find you on social media if they'd like to follow your adventures? Go down the line.
On Instagram, at Will Blum. I have a Twitter handle, but I'm not. Don't tweet me. Okay. Go on.
On Instagram, Brooke That, BROOKETHAT.
Yes. On Instagram, it's at Natsy Charlay, not Nasty Charlay.
For years, I thought it was nasty.
I know. Years. Everyone keeps looking at Nasty Charlay, and it's not. It's Nazi Charl.
It was funny.
Okay.
And mine is Instagram, Sean D. Montgomery, S-E-A-N, Sean D. Montgomery.
Yes.
You can find the podcast at Equity One Podcast on Instagram and Facebook and at Equity One _ on Twitter.
Send us an email at equityonepodcast@gmail.com.
And leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and check us out on the Broadway Podcast Network. Woo-hoo. You can get us wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes.
Caleb, where can people find you?
Caleb Dickey on everything. And Elliot, how about you?
I'm at Elliot Maddox on everything. And until next time,
cheers!
Toss that body! Gosh, it's awful, ain't it tragic? Blah, blah, Bible, Jesus, magic. When you're dead, who gives a shit? No Pilates, no more yoga, namaste, you freaking posers. From the cradle to cremation, death just needs a little conversation. I have mastered the art of tearing convention apart.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.